All right, Bonnie County, everyone. This is Professor Alvin Roth, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, former professor, counselor, and administrator for Compton Community College. We're going to get right into our subject matter, and it's dealing with the 60s argument that there's a crisis in Black identity. And what does the Black identity mean to people, if it means anything, and if they see themselves as Black? I think that's very important because the system has changed the census where you can put you mixed or you this or you that. And when it comes to African people, and it's creating problems on schools where people say, I'm not Black, I'm something else, I'm something that. And you have so many mixed marriages with Latinos, African-Americans, white African-Americans, Asians, African-Americans, Tiger Woods and all of them. And so we're going to have a brief discussion on what is the real concept of the Black identity. Now, many people accepted it in the 60s. It's only recently that things have changed. So how you see that struggle, if you see it as a struggle, in Detroit or wherever?
Well, this goes back. I mean, you're talking about we can go back to The Talented Tenth with W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, where Du Bois was saying, you know, we want the intellects, and
yeah,
Booker
10%,
T was, yeah, the Talented Tenth, and Booker T was talking about, you know, we already have the skills, you know, we have the skills from when we were enslaved. We can make some shoes, we can plumb, carpenter, shoe a horse, leather craft, you know, we can build a building. W.E.B. really didn't want to acknowledge that our intellects went to colleges that were founded by white people who taught white principles and went there and changed who and what they were, saw the world differently and saw them as being a part of the European world and moved away from their communities and looked at themselves, looked down on their brothers and sisters and identities. They claimed an identity was false to them, and it wasn't an African. They started smoking cigars and putting on suits and looking like a Black version of the European, and then in a lot of sense, started taking on their persona. Their wanting to really identify with the European more than wanted to with as much as they wanted to with the African. So this is nothing new in our community, as far as being confused on what your identity is, and that all starts with your education. Even now to the modern days, I remember when the Afro, like you said, in the 60s, coming into the 70s, it was really acceptable for Afrocentric education, even in our public schools. There's something happened, though, when Reagan got in there and started changing that around, because we became powerful. We were an entity in the political system. We had actually control of our government. We were a thing. We actually had the so-called American promise in our sight, and we were determined to have it, and we were cohesive. But now, man, it even fractured us even more. This latest thing, with the intention of breaking this down even further. That's the Reagan with the moral majority and all of them. They're hypocrites, just like today. You know, with this Trumpism and the evangelist, but that's my view on it. It's always been with us since we stepped on this continent and color was a thing. So
okay, Machinda, you there?
I am here. How are you?
Are you all right? What do you think about the Black identity and how you see Black people identifying with it or not? Is there a crisis in us forming a unified identity that's, you know.
Yeah, it's beyond a crisis. Yeah, it's beyond a crisis. I think Brother Ahi kind of pointed out some historical facts there. Looking at why, I mean, why is it important? It's the question, why should we identify, I mean, that's just a rhetorical question. I'm not asking you, but you go back in time, like I say, go back way back. I don't even think people were talking about being black or anything, I mean, at a certain point, it's like after the slave trade and all that, during that time, you come out of darkness, being oppressed and all that. So now, the turn of the 20th century, is it was that, yeah, and coming into that and trying to, you get freed and you're trying to establish your position. It's just wherever you're at, wherever in the world. But blacks had a lot of unity, and a lot of, back he was talking about the ones, the leaders that were leading, that were trying to we talked about the color conventions on the podcast before and the different things like that. So there's a pursuit to try to keep the black people unity, keep them unified, and to establish themselves, in the United States. I mean, with Garvey, hey, let's get out of, talking about the let's a mass exodus back to Africa, and that type of thing, hey, let's get out of here, And then the ones that left, and whoever's left behind, we're still living here. So, because of racism, institutional racism, blatant racism, and so forth, we've been so we have to recognize who we are because we're under attack based on our identity. Black, if you black, you're gonna get profiled by the police and those types of things and so forth. So. So I think now the importance of it, I asked that question rhetorically, like, why are we even concerned about that? Because you look at, remember we talked about Black Wall Street and Alice Worth and Rosewood and different places where we know black people are strong and surviving and things like that. But then you got people like, Mark Richardson and Byron Donald and Tim Scott and all those kind of guys. So there's always been, we talked about COINTELPRO. There's always been an active process to try to divide and conquer and keep us back and that type of thing. So they've been doing a good job. They've been doing a good job on us as a race, diminishing our our potential, diminishing our unity. I mean, people like you or me or the ones that's on this call, this is what we've been trying to fight for a long time, through our different ways of trying to educate folks and show them the importance. I was talking about this today with students about this very topic, so to speak, in a lot of ways. I was using movies and Kwanzaa and different things as an example of these are examples of where we're trying to maintain identity, maintain unity in the family, things like that. So I think that the major problem is that they're doing a good job. There are laws in place right now that we can't, if you're going to go to the university or the public school and it's funded by government money, that there's a chance that the school districts can lose money, the universities can lose money, and not have the resources to do whatever they need to do based on your teaching woke, information, as they call it, and that kind of thing. And so I mean, so that's just a continuation of COINTELPRO and everything else. So that's the reason why that as time goes on, the subliminal seduction, the infiltration of the groups, the back in the day, the Black Panthers, the US, and different groups that were powerful. You know, the FBI, you know, their goal was to eradicate that, to infiltrate that. So, I mean, it's just an ongoing battle, a war that's going on. So the fallout is that here it is in 2024. The elders that taught me, a lot of them are getting older and pass and transitioning on. And so it's like my generation is still standing. The people on this call who's part of the generation that are still trying to, resurrect these minds and things like that. But we are in competition with social media, not just media, but social media, which is powered by the internet, which is worldwide. You know, you have artificial intelligence kicking in to ex expedite information on another level. That's all that is. And so at the end of the day, hey, I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna continue to do what I have to do, but man, I hate to sound my cup, like I said before, is still half full. I gotta maintain my personal position, but man, it's a tough battle, man. The kids, you know, the generations right now, they are a lot of them are, I said it before, they have no clue of what we're talking about. You know, they have no clue of history. You know, when you ask them, you know, about certain things, they've never heard of that before. So anyway, I'm all over the place with that, but at the end of the day, I think it's important. There is a crisis, and I think it's important for people to understand what their, you know, understand their identity, understand their history, because you know information that information is powerful, but that particular information is powerful to us. That's what inspires us. That's what propels us to want to do greatness or to continue what's been done, what's the great things that have been done to build on what's already been done. But it's been diluted, you know. But there's still like hurt people on the planet that's fighting, you know. Like as you say, Professor, there are people doing great things, and it is, and we can talk about the great things. But overall, if you look at the income, the income disparities as it relates to Black people and the rest of the nation, you know. You know, we're at the bottom it as a, on the average, you know, we're on the bottom in a lot of ways. I mean, we have a lot of great things to talk about, but it's our 13% that occupy America is not doing the best, you know. So those that are doing well have to continue to try to uplift the ones that are not doing as good, you know. So that's it.
Out there for that. Brother Rasha Key, you there?
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I mean, Brother Machine and Brother Ahi made some excellent points. And when I'm looking at just the concept of race, and which was mentioned by Brother Machinda, and how we live in this color construct, which is based off a caste system. And seem like power trumps everything. It dictates how things are being determined. And there's a lot of confusion when it comes to Black identity, period. You know, there's various ways to look at the concept of being Black. And once when you have a strong cultural base, which was stimulated by the 60s movement, and people start identifying as Black and getting empowerment. And then you have infiltration, like with COINTELPRO, to start going into different organizations and basically destroying them. So there's a lot that can be said when it comes to this Black identity crisis, which is heavily influenced by the power structure. So there's a lot that can be said. Brother Mashinda said a lot, And he was making some great points, brother. He said a few things, but you know, it becomes, I think, a factor of the power structure and how it dictates and influences people mentally. And it's a challenging thing to identify as Black when you're being derailed, seduced by monetary means. I used an example earlier when we was talking before you came on, Professor Ra. I used the how Black culture get diminished by things like the Negro Baseball League. You have the Negro Baseball League, which was better than the white national leagues, you know, Major League Baseball. But the white men come in and take some of the best players, and it destroyed the Negro Baseball League as far as its authentic being authentic and great like it was. So the power structure always play a role in destroying concepts of strong Black identity. But I'll let you speak on it, Professor Ra.
Yeah, they do that. They made a Thurgood Marshall a Supreme Court justice after the Brown versus Kansas City. You know, our best attorneys, Johnny Cochran became a district attorney, assistant district attorney. And they do that. And they even go into our schools and take the best minds and give them scholarships to predominantly white schools, and you know, Oxford, Rhodes Scholar, even though Cecil Rhodes killed many of Africans, and you don't see the Native American accepting the American Cavalry Scholarship, and you don't see Jewish kids accepting the Hitler Scholarship. But like you said, the education of our young people got to come from the home, from the basis, because when you go to school, you just go to learn things that matriculate in the system to gain resources and assets to educate your family, educate yourself, and empower our people. You know where you are and who you are. And what's confusing is many young people, as Mashinda and Ahia has said, and you too, Rashiki, that you know, many people don't even identify with racism. They think they didn't get the job because somebody else was better. They don't see discrimination as blatant as we saw it when they had signs saying you can't drink here, you can't sit here, you can't do this. But they do it with code words and code things on the applications and things of this nature. But let me get back to the identity. Yes, there's been a historical conflict with regards to us finding a unifying identity that would encompass the white man. He sees us all as one, even though they claim to be biracial. They can call themselves biracial all they want. As far as he's concerned, you're not white Anglo-Saxon. You're a danger to their race. And so, you know, you think calling yourself biracial, you're going to get. Well, they're gonna always choose a lighter person, or to work in the bank and to be the front of the secretary, and promote them more because they feel that they got their blood in them. But let me just get back to this. When going back to the history, when Spaniards was in a slave in the enslavement act, and they called us Negroes, which was another word for Black. In Spanish. Then other people picked it up. And the European, you know, with their country self, uneducated self, invented the word nigger. And that, you know, short, you can just go back to that. Richard become wretched, that's the way they talked. But anyway, they were ignorant. Most people didn't even go to school. They just picked up languages from their parents or whomever, and many of them weren't educated because, they were just killers and stealers. They ain't got time for no schooling in those days. Schools didn't get you a job. They didn't have that type of a situation. You were a farmer, you were a cattleman, you were a businessman, opened stores and stuff from Europe, and you identified differently. But the white man, when he went to the continent of Africa, he got human beings, Africans, and he renamed them in different colors and different languages and things of this nature. But the anthropological origin of the Black existence is a scientific perspective of being Black. What do you mean when you're being Black? See, anthropology has two parts to it. If you ever had to take it in school, it has a cultural anthropology and physical anthropology. The physical anthropology deals with paleontologists, anthropologists, and those that research history through excavating bones and skeletons and things of this nature. When you go to the Brer Tar Pits, they dig deep into the ground and find dinosaurs, bones and things. And they can tell you the whole nature of that dinosaur. This one was a vegetarian, this one was a carnivore, this one was this, and this one did this, this one swam, this one didn't do this, based upon the genetic aspect of going through the DNA, as well as looking for certain chemicals in the animal. And that's the same way they do with humans. They can tell the color of the human by the melanin in the bones and the melanin and the texture of hair, if they find any, and the physiological aspect of putting them back together with the broad nose, bushy hair. And so from an anthropological standpoint, our geographical origin as an African people or Black people, which are interchangeable, there's no such thing as a Black African because there ain't no other kind. Everyone else comes in later. Now, by nationality, they can claim themselves African by living on the continent of Africa, and they can, like the South Africans call themselves Afrikaners, or some other white people may say, I'm an African because I lived here all my life. Like Black people say they're American by nationality, but that's nationality identity has nothing to do with your physiological identity. People become nationalized by coming to America and taking some fake oath and going through an immigration process. And that's how they become Americans, swearing that they're gonna love the country and all that type of stuff. And many of them came voluntarily, whereas the Africans did not come voluntarily. That's very important to remember that. We were kidnapped. We were the biggest sex trafficking and human trafficking aspect in the world, and still is the number one. The Native American got killed on his land. We got killed on American land and in the oceans and the things of this nature. But getting back to the anthropological origin. The anthropological origin meant that many paleontologists, anthropologists, and other people seeking truth dug up in the continent of Africa and found humans. And they found out that the earliest human beings were Africans, not only through the bones, but through the DNA. As DNA became more prominent, they traced Black people to the continent of Africa. And that's very important from a scientific standpoint of our physiological makeup, from our standpoint of our structure of our bodies and the structure of the women bodies and the texture of our hair and if they find it and the broadness of our nose and the thickness of our lips that they can put back together, and they can tell you what who was here first or who was the first, who was on the continent of Africa. The further they dig, the more they find that Africans was here. They find artifacts, not just bones, they find artifacts that represent a culture, a history, and they find out that from a scientific standpoint, because physical psych anthropology is a science. Cultural anthropology is also connected, but it's like part one, part two. You take physical first and you take cultural later, because as people got more progressive, they moved from food gatherers to food producers. And once you get to be secure You can think and you can dream and you can come up with social organizations and begin to move from instinct to rationale, living from instinct to rationale. And you begin to think, you begin to wonder, and your mind takes you out to places along with the probably the various foods you ate that stimulated thoughts and things of that nature. But in, from an anthropological scientific standpoint, our geographical origin of black people is the continent of Africa. Now, we had different textures all over the continent, and we had of colors and things of this nature and hairstyles. Some had long hair, some had bushy hair, all of that. But the point is that to that is from a scientific standpoint that the native land or the original land of the African was the continent of Africa, or Kibalon, as they called it back in those days. And that's been substantiated by many scientists and anthropologists. They come up and say, this was the oldest person, this was this, and this was that. European was staying in the cave. That's where he came up with Magna Man, Java Man, and all them type of man, Hairy Man, and all of that. But okay, from the anthropological, the geographical origin, there's no challenge to that from a scientific standpoint. You can't say Africans were born in Europe, or Africans were born in Asia, or Africans were born in Mexico, or Africa was born in Canada. They were born, they were original from the continent of Africa. The second science is the physiological, physical science. That's into biology as well as physiology from the standpoint. So the physiological aspect of our origin tells about our bushy hair, thickness, broad nose, and our how we developed on the continent of Africa, eating nuts, gathering green things and fruits and things of this nature. Many of the Africans were vegetarians and things of this nature. Some ate meat and things of this nature, of course, but the most of them were food gatherers, and that's why they got along with the animals. You never hear of them. To go to Africa and see fences around their cities to keep animals out, they had relationships and things of this nature, and they had relationships with each other as they moved from that aspect of animalism and savagery to humanism, thanks to the woman in the matriarchal system, as Jabal always point out. So the matriarchal system, but at the same time, that whole physiological aspect of black people is not only traced through the physical bones that they find, but also through the DNA. So that's very important. So that's a physical science that say what black people should look like and how they identify with the melanin and things of this nature. Then you go into the philosophical aspect of the black identity. And that's when people began to develop a science of building civilization. The woman started the first social organization called a family. And that's why she nurtured men and women. And they developed the system of matriarchy at first, but then they transitioned to a patriarchal system as the men were became hunters, and their lifespan was very short because going out there hunting and going out there and in wilderness, you can get stuck by a poison plant or plant to poison you, disease, all kind of stuff happens. And that's why you have that. But from a philosophical standpoint, when people are progressing, let's put it like this. You got money, you feel secure, you can think about, well, let's go to Vegas, let's go to Hawaii, let's go to Dubai. That's what you think about when you're prospering. And that's what Africans did as a woman developed that the architect of building the first overground house called a thatch hut, using animal dung and twigs and branches that they got from trees. And that led to what you call architecture, mastering fire, turning fire into utilization, with the first invention called the fire stick, rubbing sticks together to start fires and controlling fire for heat and for cooking the blood out the animal, but that they discovered through trial and error that some animals had bad blood and you had to cook it and things of this nature. So all of that is from a philosophical standpoint of just as they got more prosperous, they began to say, let's build. And that's when they began to develop ideologies and philosophies as they could think. Because when you don't have that, when you're hungry, and when you ain't got no place to stay, that's all you can think about. But when you're secure, you can think about other things. You understand? You think about other things. So people have began to develop philosophies and begin to question where the world came from and how the world came to be in. And you had the Dogon stars, you had other forms of information that came much later because the first gods were human gods and were animalism. Every god was in everything. Then it became a situation of lunar gods, solar gods. That's where the term Amun-Ra came from, solar god. And so it's a thing of studying the history of philosophy, which led to cultural development. The foundation of culture is very unique because anything can be true if you get people to believe it. It may not be true, but it'd be true to them. That's with religion, and that's with any other philosophy. The foundation of understanding anything is knowledge, and the foundation of knowledge is truth. The way you see it then, and it may change later because it's evolutionary. The truth has always been evolutionary. It changes because the earth changed, technology changes, and things of this nature. What we used to do, walk, and now we ride. You understand? And some people forget that we used to walk. You understand? And the same thing with languages, listening to animals, listening to the sounds of nature help you develop sounds in which you communicate it. And so all of that came with the development of the various great civilizations of Egypt, Ethiopia, and southern parts of Africa. In the book, Destruction of Black Civilization by Chancellor Williams, he talked about how many of the people and that built the pyramids in Egypt got it from southern parts of Africa where they had smaller pyramids and things of that nature. And the whole concept of burying people in tombs and things of that nature with their wives, with their family, and with their possessions was something. Moving from just burning people or just letting them rot and things of this nature, you begin to develop the concept of burying. And if you ever study the history of burials, then you understand who was the first that began to see life after death and treated it that way from an Afrocentric perspective. So you have the anthropological origin, you have the physiological, and you have the philosophical, where social organizations and social perspective become all of them pertaining to the Black identity. Because before there was an African identity, there was a Black identity. In other words, when you're born and you come out in color, they say, yeah, he's a Black baby. Then they give you a name. You can't call Africa a Black people who came out in color Africans until they got social organization and developed ethnic groups and racial groups. Most people are named after the ethnic groups that they became part of, on the continent of Africa. And just like the Native American, they did the same thing. They named their kids Little River or Little Bear or, Little Eagle or something, Little Hawk. You understand? They developed totems to represent what is called the symbol of strength. Or the identity of a community. A totem is like like you see totem poles for the Native American. Well, Africans had totems too. They didn't make it a pole. They were just, if they saw eagles, they would, you know, they would identify with. If they saw the lion, they identified with the lion's strength. If they saw elephants, they identified with the elephant strength, and they would develop culture and names to represent those things. And this is like one brother used to say, when European first came and saw the kangaroo, and he asked the brother, what's the name? The brother said kangaroo in his language. And then the man said, okay, kangaroo, and they began to call it. But what the guy said was, I don't, that's what it, what meant in his language. Kangaroo meant, I don't know. You understand? But you know, these are things that nature teach you, you know. So we move from that aspect to the social conflict of identity crisis here. Many people in organizations have thought about it. It wasn't until the 80s that Jesse Jackson, them, and the middle class started arguing that we African American. Before that, they were arguing that Martin Luther King, then we were Negro, except for in certain parts of his speech, he did say we were Black people, mighty people, and one day the world is going to say that we injected a morality into society to change it. He said that in, I think in his first Montgomery speech, when he took over the movement for the bus boycott. And the same thing with the Nation of Islam, who say they came, that they met with God, Elijah Muhammad. The Master Farah was a white man. They said that the reason he came is white man, God came as white man. We wouldn't believe he was God if we said, if he identified as Black. And that's how they formed the Nation of Islam from Master Farah Muhammad, which is their business, you understand? That's their religion. People create religions. You can say, I don't believe in Christianity, but you can't say there ain't no Christians around because they live and die a Christian life. If Jesus didn't die on the cross, you wouldn't believe that he ever existed. He died. He could have said, God ain't my daddy. I was just tripping, you know, let me off this cross. But he didn't say that. He said, hey, I'm going down with this. And that's why they began to build the Christian movement 30 years after he had died. But the point is, people don't do research. People don't do research how Islam, how Judaism came about, and how they stole from other philosophies and value systems and wrote books that they call Bibles and holy, their words. These were other people's words way before they even thought of it. But they used it not to save souls, but to take souls, enslave souls, and make money. But you can't tell a Christian that. You can't tell a Muslim that. And you can't tell a Jewish person that. You can't sense anybody locked in a religion. Maybe a Christian Science, Scientology, whatever. They ain't going to believe nothing you say because their tenets is don't believe nobody else. You know, if you believe somebody else, you can't be wound up. They're all secret societies. See, like I tell you all the time, the cult is what you believe in. A cult is who you want to believe in. So Jesus is who they believe in. That's the cult. And a cult is the Christians. And there's millions of them. You know, the Pope built a whole empire behind saying that there's life after death and follow me and follow these rituals that we created. Be virgins, be nuns, be this. And then you find out they got babies and they homosexuals and, you know, but they corrupted it. Now, were there real Christians who practiced the tenements? At one time, yeah. And, you know, they were forced to because it was punishment if you didn't. If you join, it's just like if you join a fraternity, they punish you if they catch you messing up. You know, it ain't no death, but you know, they'll spank you or you be suspended or something. You know, I mean, they do all kinds of stuff. I remember when I was in college, they used to brand the names on the this the symbols on the people's shoulders, branding. I said, wow, you know, and they do it, but that's it. But anyway, getting back to the work I did. So we come here, many of us, they mixed us up, and they put all different ethnic groups from the continent in the Holocaust of enslavement for strategic reasons. They didn't want them to have the same language. They didn't want them to be from the same community so that they could just mix them up. And that's the way they're dealing with the black identity today. That's why they invented biracial. What the hell is biracial? When they at one time said one inkling of black blood make you black. That's what they said. That was the law. You understand? And I mean, it's just that's fine. So the black movement, so they demonize black people or colored or Negroes, whatever they call them. They demonized them and they made laws against mating and cohabitate, even though they snuck. The man snuck to get the woman, and the woman snuck to get the big brother. You understand? She took care of him, and he took care of her. You understand? They wouldn't get sold, or they wouldn't get beat, or they were allowed to come in the house and work in the house, act like they were working, and then they were just sex concubines. Well, everybody know those histories. And them that he didn't like or didn't, he just raped men, women, and children. You understand? I mean, this is a person that don't want to open up that can of worms of studying black history because it demonizes his ancestors and what they did to people, the Native American, the African. I mean, see, when you open up our history, you open up everybody's history. You understand the Native American, what they did to them, what they did to the Chinese, what they did to other whites who they saw as inferior. All of that come out when you do. That's why when black people come in, everybody can come in. You understand? That's a struggle. But getting back, so we matriculated all the way up to the 30s and the 40s as Negroes and accepted it as our name, and the majority of us. Some didn't. The Nation of Islam said we was the original man. Say, who's the colored man and who's the black man? I mean, who's the original man and who's the colored man? And they would always say that the white man was the original man and the black people were the colored man. But that's not true. The Nation of Islam taught it different. They said the colored man is the white man who colors everything. And the original man was the black man. That's what their teachings are. And so but anyway, we go on and on. And so then we get to the civil rights movement. In the civil rights movement, most of the people were fighting for Negro rights. Civil rights organizations. National Negro Women Association. National NAACP. You know, National Negro Association. You understand? All of that. They called themselves Negro. And they accepted it because white men had called them that all their lives and things of this nature. And they demonized both Negro and black. So when the black movement came in the 60s, the word black became black power when Stokely Carmichael and his other brother, Willie Ricks, were marching in what they call the March of Against Fear, when James Meredith was walking by himself to go to integrate Alabama. He got shot. And so Martin Luther King called a march against fear to continue his march. He never made the march. And that's when Stokely and Willie Ricks, and they were singing Old Negro Spiritual, came out with the term Black Power. Black Power. And that's how Black Power became popularized with at that time Stokely Carmichael, who's now Kwame Ture, man. You know, the spirit be witnessed forever. And Willie Ricks, he got another name, I can't remember it. But he's a good brother, good brother. And they're the one that popularized the term Black Power, even though it was used inadvertently back in the 1800s, 1700s. But the popularization of it, and to change it from a negative connotation to a positive connotation. And that's when the cultural movement came, saying, I'm Black and I'm proud. You understand? No Black Chocolate Girl. You know, all kinds of songs about Blackness came out. Popular Growth, Message to the Black Man, The Temptations. All of those things came out. And we were wearing dashikis, natural haircuts. Black people were proud of being who they were. And that started the Black movement. And then organizations began to name themselves Black Panther, Us Organization. You mean, you know, and just a number of groups, the Black Liberation Army, Black this, Black that, Community Alert Patrol. See, all this stuff about guardian angels, we were starting that way before then. See, white folks, the first police department were volunteers. It was called watchmen, night watchers, day watchers. It was called minutemen. All that type of stuff. They didn't start paying police till later. And the whole purpose of the police was to suppress Black uprisings and Native American uprisings. That's why they came into being. In the book, A Civil Rights Commission, 1981-82, Brother, the commission came out from the history of the police, and they said that the first police department was born in the South, and its primary job was to suppress Black people and Native Americans. And that's what they did. And that's why to this day we still fighting that aspect. But getting back to the anthropological and the physiological identity, you know, the movement was going strong until COINTELPRO, as many of you have mentioned, came into being. And what did they do? They changed, they began to change the concept to divide us. Where, you know, like terms like you are biracial, or you don't have to put down you Black, you can say other if you don't want to put biracial on the census. But before then, they used to put Black. But then they began to inject that. Second, Black people began to buy into it. You understand? Many of them would say, I'm biracial, because they have mixed parents, because they're not lynching like they used to. And they gave favor to many of them. That's what Du Bois and Marcus Garvey argued about. But Garvey said you couldn't trust light people. Farrakhan said that too. Even though he's light, say he injects our blood in him, so we lean toward him. But the Black identity is something that is associated with our cultural movement. Black books came out, Black psychology, Black family, Black this, Black that. Just go back and you find all kinds of books about Blackness. Black poetry, Black music, Black art. They had a Black arts movement, and they had renaissances. And so Black was good. But then the European has changed it around to divide us and make people think that they are victims of racism and that they have favor by promoting and hiring Black people in certain key positions that they control. You know, here is Thurgood Marshall, the only Black person on the Supreme Court. Here is Ketanji Brown, the only Black woman on the Supreme Court. And here they are making sure that don't happen again recently, electing Trump, who is a staunch white nationalist. He says that. He associated with white nationalist group. The Ku Klux Klan started for the primary purpose of intimidating Black people and killing them. And they looked at them as Black. We had to turn all that around with the black movement. And some of us still use the term black to mean something beautiful and something powerful. In response to what I said, he?
No, you're right on point. You're right on point, and I'll turn you on to a few things. I'm right with you, Professor. I yield to Mashinda.
Okay, what about you, Mashinda? Are you still there?
I'm still here, still out, still hanging.
What do you think?
Well, I concur. I think you broke it down in record time, you know, condensed it. You condensed your lecture. You probably took your 4 week lecture into 30-40 minutes, and that showed you your creativity and your wit. But you know, at the end of the day, back to square one is fast forwarding to 2025.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, so what we gonna do? Like, what's next? You know, and struggle continues. And appreciate you, you know, like I say, putting it together. You covered a lot of points that's not only food for thought, but just straight up historical references that are important to understand in order to ward off a lot of other, you know, to eliminate ignorance and to empower, you know, oneself, you know, because without this information, without, you know, again, like I said rhetorically, what is, you know, what's the whole point? But if we really know our true history, understand, you know, what it's all about, then, you know, like I said, we tap into our greatness, you know, we become more useful and more valuable as a resource to our community, you know. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, me and my wife started a garden in the spring, last spring, and we started it from seeds. Every plant we grew, from banana peppers to jalapenos to bell peppers, even onions and ginger and those types of things, squash and so forth, tomatoes. And so we had to nurture, we had to not only germinate, we had to plant them and then repot them and replant them, and they grew and it produced. And so same thing with these, dealing with these wayward minds in society, that unless they get a dose of this on a regular basis, they're going to continue to be lost on a journey and going to be hijacked or sidetracked to some other situation, which gets further and further from what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to put out, you know. So there's a lot, like I say, there's a lot of competition in terms of time, you know, our time and resource that we put out there, you know, to try to, you know, to bring people into the light. So as a survival mechanism, you know, this you know, information is part of your survival. And so again, if you don't nurture those minds, that garden, those minds, then it's, you know, nothing's going to grow, or if you don't continue to water it, it's going to die. It's going to, you know, if it don't get to enough sun, it's not going to make it. And so this information is the light, it's the sun, it's the water, it's the, you know, it's the nurturing. And it's part of, you know, it's part of that whole growth process. And so we need more farmers out there to cultivate these minds, you know, and we got them, but it's a battle. But I appreciate your commentary tonight, your lecture. Thank you.
Yeah, well, let me just say that. As Dr. Karenga teaches, and we do this in Kawi, the philosophy, you have to choose to be black and or African when you're in America, because you're so acculturated and you want to be American, you know, and it's a cult. America is a cult. And that's why people, it's hard for them to change no matter how much truth you show them. It's like trying to get a Christian to change or a Muslim to change. It's very difficult. Because, brainwashing and cultivating people into believing that your truth is more important than their own truth is a powerful thing. As we see in Malan say, one of the biggest examples of power is to get people to accept your version of life, even in opposition to theirs, even if it's in conflict with theirs. But that happened. And the struggle, you're not going to get everybody. There's some people don't want to be with you. There's people get married and say, I'm out. You understand? Make all them promises at the thing, kiss, throw rice and shit. And then the next thing you know, they divorce before they get home after they open up their damn gifts. You understand? And ready to get married again and get some more gifts. So it's a, I mean, people go to church and get married, they ain't never been in a church. You understand? I mean, it's just rituals after rituals. And so it reinforced being an American. You have to choose to be conscious of the man. What you do is different from any other person, Mashinda, down there, mostly in Louisiana. What did he do? What Washakie do? You understand? Y'all think different. You understand? But you can't even tell your kids. You can teach them, be an example, but they still want to be American. You understand? They won't go Magic Mountain. No mountain is magic. You understand? Just make your money disappear. Going to go Disneyland. By the time you get out of Disneyland, you be dizzy. All the money you didn't spend. That's sad. But that's their mentality. Enjoy life the way white folks enjoy it. And it's a challenge. But we're not trying to get them. Some people, you got to just let them be who they want to be and work with those that will accept the knowledge and teach the knowledge to their children and to others. Most of our movement, it was always a minority of people in the struggle. People benefit from it. You understand? But they won't give credit to the struggle. All these people going to these big white hotels don't give credit to the civil rights movement. They think they belong there. They have a right to be there. Like some, oh man, exactly. But anyway, Mashinda, you have any, I mean, Rashid, you have any comment?
Professor Rob,
What?
usual, we're getting life lessons under your tutelage, and it becomes a source of value, and what we value is very important, and it shapes our lives. I know that. Just, being in the company of you brothers, I get to analyze all of the things that's being said. And whatever you spend time doing, it impressed upon you. So we're very impressionable people in what we're involved with. And what I value is what's most constructive. And I think what we do here is very important and constructive. And we just got to keep doing it because it's giving the masses, if they choose to listen, some very valuable lessons. And I can't see myself doing anything else but being a part of educational institutions that's going to uplift and improve our situation as people. So I'm just thrilled that I'm able to get these lessons on a consistent basis.
I used to think that being black was just not liking white people. But being black is loving you and your people. That's being black. You understand? I don't have no problem with white folk. They I know who they are. I know what they'll do. they made their own footprints in the sands of time. That's why, I don't interact like that in the personal relationships and things. And the thing they can do is give me a check, and then I'm gone. But the other thing is that, and I don't give them a free pass for what they've done through history. You understand? Like they get themselves. But at the same time, you got to remember that our struggle is a struggle to win the hearts and minds of our people. That's a long, protracted struggle. But you, like Rasha Key say, that's why we're here to educate, to bring up things that stimulate thought. You don't have to believe what I say. Just look it up. You don't have no problem accepting the anthropologist and paleontologist discovery of these dinosaurs. And he comes out and tell you, you got to put that down on the test. But if we tell you black people were the first people on earth, then and from anthropology and DNA, you question it. Because the Europeans said, oh, that's some people just romantically in love with themselves. You understand? So anyway, we'll continue this. Arash, can you close us on out? Listen, I'm sorry I was so late. Boy. Whew. You ready, Rasha Key? Who we got tomorrow? Are you there? You may have stepped away for a minute. Okay, but I think our brother Thomas is going to be on tomorrow. Rasha Key, you come back yet? You on mute. All right, brothers. I'm going to close it on out. He may have something he had to do. I'm not sure. Times come up to eat all them herbs. You got to do things.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
Look. Hey, they got tomorrow's anniversary, huh?
Yeah.
So tomorrow's anniversary, so they Ronnie Roberts, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's who's going to be here, Ronnie Roberts. All right.
Gonna be our fourth year. Yet,
Okay, I had to step away. I'm back.
All right. I say close us out, Rasha T, tomorrow.
Yeah, so we got our fourth anniversary. We've been here on the CNN show for 4 years. We got Ronnie Roberts, and he wants to talk about the voting statistics related to the Trump presidency. So that's what we're going to be talking about.
All right. It'll be interesting. I'll be here tomorrow on time.
Okay.
Where did that?
All
All right.
right then. I haven't gotten my guests together for next week, but I'll call you tomorrow, Rashi, if I
Okay,
can
so
solidify it.
each one teach one in God's corner.
All right then. Tutana, Ahi, and Mashinda.
Simon.
Take care.